What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my not-so-much pick-and-pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Growing the beard out. Doing well, though.
How bad is the beard?
I mean, we're 2 months in now, and this is like the longest I've ever grown my hair out and beard out, so it's getting there. It's getting there.
And your hair.
I think I have like the Marc Gasol type beard going right now. So it's not quite like full Kendrick Perkins, but it's getting there.
It's on the way.
Yeah.
A couple of months behind. That's okay, man. You'll get there.
It's very itchy, though, I must say. So I'm probably going to shave soon.
This guy. The Iso Raj, how you feeling?
Not too bad. I've been growing out the beard for a lot longer than 1 month compared to Josh.
How's your beard looking?
Well, it's like 14 years of hard work, so I'm past the itchy part.
Are you just massaging it every day, giving yourself essential oils?
I wish. I don't take that good care of myself.
It's a shame, man. You got to treat your face right. You should know this by now, man. Haven't I taught you anything with my luscious beard?
Those, like, you call that a beard.
Those four strands of hair.
I got the non-hairy Asian genes, man. What can I say? Keeps it nice and clean, my man.
Clean? You look like Fang.
Yeah, I think I gotta shave soon.
Oh, man.
Dream's over. It's been over a month. I made my point. I can do this. And still barely be noticed for what it is.
How does Vicky put up with you? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she hates it.
She absolutely hates it.
Oh, man, but it's fun, though. I love having this. I've never had this much facial hair in my life.
I'm just looking forward to when I can, like, go full, you know, Shawn Michaels and have, like, really long, luscious hair.
You should just grow your hair and shave your beard.
That's what I'm planning to do. I think in about 6 months, my hair might be down on my shoulders.
Yo, do it.
I'm not sure if I'm going to go, like, mohawk or mullet, though. We'll see.
Just shave the sides and the back.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't really trust myself. With that kind of, you know, that kind of work.
No, just get the wife to do it.
I really don't trust her.
All you gotta do is take a razor to it, man. It's not very hard.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't trust her with a razor. She's gonna cut me.
I'm not telling you to fade it out. Just cut it short. Then you can be a cool guy like me.
Yeah, you and that fantastic facial hair of yours.
Oh, yes, man. All right. I think we can pretty much establish ourselves as canceling the NBA season, right? Maybe the playoffs? I highly doubt that as well. But I guess now is, you know, there's no better time than the present to go through the NBA awards. So we're going to go through MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man, you know, all the majors. And I've also pulled up our predictions just to see, you know, how we fared with ourselves. Because if I recall correctly, Josh had the Philadelphia 76ers pretty much sweeping the board. Good job on that, Josh.
Hey, they still got a shot in the playoffs, okay? If there is a playoff.
All right, well, let's start with the best award there is. Obviously, the MVP. Raj, why don't you start it off here?
I honestly don't remember exactly who I picked, but I would be hard-pressed to go against Giannis. I think he's a clear-cut favorite for the MVP. There was a bit of late noise by LeBron James. Obviously, the Lakers had a great season, but Giannis, what he does on both sides of the ball consistently, Milwaukee's the best team in the league, at least the regular season. And on that note, like, this is probably the only season probably in NBA history where the regular season actually mattered a lot, because we may not have a postseason. But Giannis, again, I don't think it's as close as what the media wants to make it. I think Giannis has this in the bag. And actually, now that I think about it, I think I had him repeating as back-to-back MVP.
No, 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 sir. You did not. I listened to the podcast today just to prepare for this. You, my friend, had Anthony Davis.
He's also a candidate, but you know what? Well, like, let's just say that I didn't have all my marbles right back in October.
Yeah, you were leaning towards Giannis, but for some reason just swayed to AD during the podcast. I don't know what happened there. But
well, Giannis is the boring pick, though.
You think so? None of us had Giannis going into it. Josh, you had Embiid, and I had Jokic.
Yeah, like I said, we're all trying to branch out and pick somebody different, right? So nobody wants to pick the easy pick.
Yeah, I mean, is there even a question about Giannis doing this? 30-14-6 for the year. Clearly, like, they have the best team in the league. Obviously, a defensive monster leading his team in literally, like, every category you can think of. There's no other question, right? LeBron obviously made a push. And to be honest, if the season had actually continued and finished, LeBron might be a lot closer than we think. Because he was getting hot, like, typically in LeBron fashion. He usually turns it out right before the playoffs. And Giannis actually hurt himself, like, a few days before the season got canceled. Or delayed, or postponed, or whatever you want to call it. But Giannis had that injury just before against the Lakers, and who knows how long he would have been out for, right? It could have been LeBron's take.
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, over the course of the entire season, Giannis is by far the most consistent player. I mean, LeBron was great as well, but, you know, with the Bucks' dominance and Giannis just putting up ridiculous numbers every single game, and also playing two less minutes per game, too. He's playing 30.9 minutes per game in the regular season, which would lead you to believe come playoff time, maybe Budenholzer's going to play him more than 36 minutes per game in the playoffs like he did last year, and actually play him 40-plus whenever he needs to. But yeah, in terms of the regular season, Giannis is putting up like ridiculous per 36 stats. I think he was at like 32 points and 16 rebounds and 7 assists. I mean, just overall, he's averaging 30-14-6 on ridiculous percentages from the field, obviously. The one thing that, you know, he hasn't done as well this season is his free throw percentage. That has gone down, but, you know, ultimately it doesn't really matter when you're shooting 10-plus free throws a game and you're winning every game by 20.
Yeah, he sits out a lot of fourth quarters. That's just how good this Milwaukee team was this year. Who did you have for second place, Josh?
I had LeBron. I mean, it's a pretty easy second pick. Third pick is a little bit more difficult, but in terms of the second pick, I think that's pretty obviously LeBron.
26-11-8, leading the league in assists on the year. The only player in double-digit assists, right? And what is this, his 17th season, probably? Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
He's been putting up absurd numbers, and like, let's go through this exercise. If you took Giannis off of Milwaukee, and then you took LeBron off of the Lakers, which team would struggle more? Like, which team would lose more games or have a difference in their current record versus the record they would have without their superstar?
I think the Lakers would be worse, yeah, just because they play in a tougher conference. And then also the supporting cast, I think Milwaukee's supporting cast is better just because of the system they play in and also just how they play overall. They just fit better. Whereas the Lakers, you're getting different guys on each night that are stepping up depending on the matchup. Whereas, you know, Milwaukee has more consistency in their lineup overall just based on, you know, their schemes and the way that these guys fit into their system.
Yeah, we saw Milwaukee without Giannis for a bunch of games there. And I mean, they look fine. Every game, I remember, this is really sad, but throughout the season when we were gambling on these games, Josh, I'm sure you remember these too. I bet against Milwaukee a couple of times when Giannis was out, and man, I was wrong. They were still blowing out teams and winning by like 12 or 10 points pretty easily. Whereas whenever you saw the Lakers without LeBron, like, that's their primary ball handler. He facilitates the whole offense. Obviously, he's not the same defensive player as he used to be, but this year he was actually semi-engaged on defense too, so yeah, the Lakers without LeBron is just an absolute mess.
Yeah, so what? Like, this is the tough part with the MVP voting. It's like LeBron is very valuable to his team, and I think we probably all agree he's probably more valuable to the Lakers than Giannis is to the Bucks. So, like, I could see why the story is being made that LeBron, in his 17th year, is really carrying this Lakers team because, like Josh mentioned, the pieces in Milwaukee fit a lot better around the team strategy, the structure. Like, they shoot a lot of threes. They give up a lot of threes. They protect the paint. Like, everyone knows their role. Whereas in the Lakers are almost like a collage of players that really don't fit a specific, like, strategy, or they don't fit a particular game style like we see with the Rockets or even like a team like the Raptors or obviously the Bucks. So I think LeBron, if someone makes the argument that LeBron deserves MVP, I'm not going to shut it down as quickly as I would like to, but I still think Giannis deserves it. But the award's so tough because, like, if you took LeBron away, the Lakers wouldn't be as good. So shouldn't he win the award?
You also have to think, make it more so about how they played over the course of the regular season versus how valuable they are in terms of impact just being on the court. Because you still have to produce, you know, in the long run. And I think Giannis has been way more consistent and has produced more than LeBron, which is why, you know, the Bucks' scoring margin is as big as it is, which normally is a precursor to them, you know, winning the title or at least coming close. Their, you know, disparity in terms of, like, points per against, you know, teams they're playing against is ridiculous. It's at, like, 13 or 14 points in terms of the margin of victory. So, I don't know. I think Giannis has just been better. In terms of the value, though, I mean, it's obviously pretty close. If you're talking about, like, playoff-wise, I think neither team would obviously have a chance without either one of those players. But I think Milwaukee would have a better, you know, better chance of actually advancing and winning a round without Giannis versus the Lakers without LeBron. But, again, that doesn't really matter. It's about production overall with me.
Raj, who'd you have in third place?
Third place. Oof, this is tough. Like, I feel like I'm going to go with an unpopular pick here, but I'm going to go with James Harden. He's still averaging, like, 35 points a game. I know, but without James Harden, that team's nowhere where they would be. And to average his point total, it doesn't mean I enjoy watching it, but to average his point total, to have the impact that he has is just amazing. And every NBA player would love to have his numbers. It's not a surprise that only he can do it because he has some extreme talent and it's not fun on the eyes, but it works.
At the same time, though, I mean, that team was relying more on Westbrook the last month and a half to 2 months of the season. Like, he was the player for that team. Especially once they went small ball, when, you know, Westbrook was just going one-on-one against guys and having the entire lane to himself since Capella wasn't there anymore. And Harden was struggling the last two months of the season. I think he was, like, averaging, like, 38% from the field or something close to that. And his point total was way down. I think it was under 30. So Westbrook became the alpha male of that team. So I think that, you know, if you have a guy that's in the MVP running who's not even the best player on his team for at least a month and a half of the season, I don't think he can be the third guy.
Yeah, but oh no, 30 points per game. Shame on him.
No, he's obviously putting up, like, historic stats, obviously. But, like, at the start of the season, he was averaging near 40 points per game. And there's all this talk throughout the first month and a bit that he was going to average 40 points per game throughout the entire regular season. And then he had a massive drop-off, especially in the last 2 months of the season. So, I mean, he was still putting up stats, obviously. But he was nowhere near as effective, which I think is why Westbrook took more of the usage as the season went along.
Yeah, and with superstar players like this, you're sort of fighting against your own legacy as well, right? Like, we saw LeBron lose a bunch of MVPs because he didn't play up to LeBron's standards in, like, you know, 2011, 2012. But realistically, LeBron probably should have been MVP for a couple of those years that he lost out on it. It's the same thing with Harden. He's not scoring 40 efficiently for the whole season, so you're used to having him at this high standard. And when he's not living up to that, you're like, oh, whatever, he's fallen off. Doesn't mean he's not doing really well and he's not great. It just means that, you know, you're just compared to what you were, and it's harsh.
Yeah, and I mean, they're tied for the 6th seed right now with the team that they traded with, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, I mean, there's an argument there that Chris Paul has been more valuable than James Harden over the course of regular season.
Wow. Is he your third?
No.
Who's your third?
I'm not going to be that biased. But Chris Paul has been better than Westbrook over the course of the regular season this year.
He has. He's been more consistent.
Yeah.
Who's your third, Josh?
I got Kawhi. I mean, the Clippers are still, in second place in the Western Conference. They have 44 wins, 20 losses. Houston's four games behind them. So it was close, but I think Kawhi was the third guy in my book because he's having a really good season despite it sort of being under the radar in terms of stats. I mean, people are still talking about him, obviously. But he's still putting up, like, 27 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. That's the biggest one for me. Like, his playmaking has really taken another step up this season. And he's been really good on the pick and roll, especially with Zubac and Montrezl Harrell. He's looking for them more often instead of looking for his own. And I think he's, you know, taken another step up in his game with his passing improvement.
That's not bad. You can say Homer for mine, but I picked Nikola Jokic as my third. He's still averaging 20, 10, and 7 assists. Played every game that the Nuggets have had this year, so 65 games. Obviously, he started off really slow. We were all shitting on him in October, November, even to December. But man, that dude worked himself into shape. And if you look at him now, he's like a completely different player than the beginning of the year. He's actually moving. He's a lot slimmer, obviously. And I don't know, he's anchored this Denver team. Obviously, he's the main guy. But they're in third place in the West. It's not like they're much further back from the Clippers. So they're a game and a half back from the Clippers. Much better numbers than Kawhi.
My issue with...
Sorry?
Yeah, I was going to say my issue with Jokic is if you took away the first 20 games of the season, 15 to 20, then I think he deserves to be in the top three. But again, this is like the second year where he hasn't started off warm and he's playing his way into shape, which is probably the better way of doing it. You rather than like coming in hot and then burning out towards the end of the season. But again, that team still isn't clicking as it's supposed to. Like, their potential is a little higher, and of course we didn't see how the end of the season played out, but I think three is a bit high for Jokic. But I'm actually interested to see where you guys have Harden on the list.
I think Harden's probably number four for me. So same idea as with Jokic. I mean, both guys had 1 to 2 months where they just weren't up to their own standards. But I think Harden's peak so far this season has been better than Jokic's peak. And again, like, the records are not that far off. I mean, Houston's only 2.5 games behind Denver since they were struggling a little bit lately. But yeah, I would say that Harden has had a better overall season. But I sort of like how Jokic has taken the Andre Miller approach to the season, and that he doesn't really work out in the offseason and works his way back into shape throughout the course of the season, which limits his injuries, to be honest. I mean, I don't know, I guess with some guys, less, you know, weightlifting and less doing work in the offseason has helped certain individuals, even though they come in fat, like Jokic. But Jokic plays every game, so whatever he's doing is working.
He has 14 more games played than Kawhi does. And he's a game and a half back from Kawhi. Or from the Clippers, I guess, in general. That's all I'm saying, man. I had Harden as five. I had Kawhi as four. Winning means something.
Honestly, I think like if Luka doesn't miss those 2 or 3 weeks, I think he would be number three. Because, you know, they're 40-27 this season. And he would have the narrative behind him, too, with like a lot of people thinking that Dallas wasn't going to be that great this season or even make the playoffs. Now, I was not one of those people, by the way. But, you know, Luka's putting up historic numbers in a second season. And, you know, once he really improves his three-point shot, I mean, the sky's the limit for him.
Raj, who did you have running at your 4 and 5?
Yeah, so I had Nikola Jokic in my fourth spot. And then I would probably, at number five, that's where I would put Kawhi. And again, it's just because of the load management. And I also think on paper, the Clippers are a very good team. They have, obviously, when Paul George is playing, they have probably the best roster on paper. So it's hard for me to give him all that credit, because if you took out Kawhi, I still think there's enough talent on that Clippers team to have a successful season. Maybe not 44 wins, but they would be closer to like 36, maybe 37.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Defensive Player of the Year. Josh?
So I think you guys might disagree with this one, but I have Giannis as my Defensive Player of the Year this year. Milwaukee's putting up the best defensive rating, I think, in NBA history right now. And him and Brook Lopez are obviously the two main reasons for that, but Giannis has just been everywhere on the defensive end, and he's upped his rebound rate as well. So he's closing out possessions with a rebound too, and he can guard pretty much 1 through 5 now, since the NBA isn't really relying so, you know, more so on post-ups. But he's been consistently great the entire season, even on the defensive end. So I have him as my Defensive Player of the Year.
No issues here. I have him as my Defensive Player of the Year as well.
Yeah, I think a clean sweep for Giannis. Honorable mention to Anthony Davis.
But, yeah, he's the guy I thought you guys might go with.
Nah. Yeah, he's top three, but nah.
So who do we have as number three then?
I have Giannis, AD, and then Kawhi.
Kawhi, Interesting.
Yeah, man. You don't have him as your third?
I have Marcus Smart as my number three.
Oh.
So Boston's number four in defensive rating, and he's just been tremendous the entire season, especially when he plays bigger minutes. And he's always the guy guarding the other team's best player. And he always plays crunch time minutes, no matter if the Celtics are healthy or not, which means, you know, one of their big guys, big stars is sitting on the bench because Marcus Smart has to be in there the last 3 minutes of the game. So yeah, I think Marcus Smart has been amazing this year. Sort of going off of what he did, you know, the last postseason, he was really good on defense despite, you know, some of the other Celtics not playing up to par, but he's just been, you know, exceptionally good, I think.
Raj, who are your top three?
Yeah, Giannis, Anthony Davis, and then Rudy Gobert. Rudy. I think, again, just the consistency with Rudy helps that defense, anchors them, puts up good stats, gets consistent, boards. Though. Well, I think he's been more consistent. Like, the thing with Marcus Smart is, I guess, for me, I think Marcus Smart individually is a great defender. I think Rudy is a good team defender, and he helps that defense out and gives them one of the better defensive ratings.
See, the thing with me is, like, I know this got a lot of pub over the course of the last 2 months. You know, Rudy not getting the ball led to him really loafing on defense. And there's been a couple of videos out there of him just not trying against pick-and-roll coverages just because he wasn't getting the ball. And he was getting, like, 3 to 5 shots a night in certain nights, especially in the month of February. And the Jazz are surprisingly 11th in defense this year. So that's the reason why I left him off my ballot.
Yeah, same. He's Man, that guy's very mentally weak from the looks of it. Whatever it is between him and Donovan Mitchell, obviously before all this Corona stuff started, if you watch them even from the beginning of the year, there was zero chemistry between those two. Like, Mitchell's looking him off all the time. He's pouting as he play, like, doesn't run back on defense because he's not getting the ball on offense. He's very similar to Harden and what we were saying with Harden earlier. We're comparing him to what we expect out of him. And he has not showed up at all this year. I hate watching that guy play defense now. And I, like, last year he was an absolute beast. Now you can see that he's just, like you said, loafing around. It's really sad.
I mean, I wouldn't say the entire season. He was really good up until, like, January, February. And then something happened to where, you know, maybe the Jazz changed something in their offense or he just wasn't getting the ball as much on the roll. But yeah, like you said, like, Gobert on the pick and roll, Mitchell doesn't really look for him nearly as much as a guy like Joe Ingles or even Bogdanovich. And I truly think that Gobert is going to be somewhere else come this offseason, whenever the offseason is going to actually start.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Rudy. Good knowing you.
It's going to be interesting rebuild if that happens for the Jazz. They're going to have to rebuild on the fly. But I think they can get a lot back for him, though, at the same time.
Another podcast.
Yeah.
That's a shame. They could have been something good. They could have been something good. Who did you have rounding out your five, Josh?
I actually only did a top three, to be honest. So
yeah, same.
I mean, if I had to choose, honestly, LeBron's been really good this year. He's tried pretty much the entire season, so I think he'd be in my top five.
Over Kawhi?
I think so. I mean, I think in that situation, you have to sort of base it on games played. Just the fact that LeBron's putting in full effort this year on both sides of the ball, especially the defensive end. And Kawhi, he's been good. He's been better as the season's gone along. But to start the season, he wasn't really trying as much, I don't think, from what I saw.
Okay, I have a question for you guys. The Toronto Raptors rank second in defensive rating at just under 105, which is pretty damn good. Why don't we have anyone from the Raptors on this list? No Team Lowry, defense. Gasol, Siakam.
Well, I think we're going to get into that once we move on to another award.
This guy.
Yeah, and I think it's because they play very good team defense. They have good defenders. I just think individually it's hard to pinpoint one that's the X factor.
I mean, if you're going to pick one, I think it's clearly Siakam, because once they go into their weird schemes and coverages where he's at the top of the zone, or they're trapping in the backcourt because they're down 15-plus in the fourth quarter. Like, he is the guy that causes all the havoc. So he's definitely their best defensive player.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. I like Siakam. All right, moving on. We've got Rookie of the Year next. That's got to be Ja Morant, right? 17.6, 6.9 assists, 3.5 rebounds. Obviously, Zion is in the conversation, but he's only played, what, less than 20 games? He came out as an absolute beast with 23.6 and, like, almost 7 rebounds, but there's no way this is a competition between the two, right? It's got to be Ja.
Yeah, I'm going to answer this one quickly, and hopefully we don't spend more time on this. Zion is just out of the conversation because he's only played 19 games. His impact was good. He's had some great highlights. He's going to be a good player if he stays healthy. Maybe a great, maybe a superstar in 1 or 2 years. But this year, it was Ja's year as Rookie of the Year. Great stats. His Grizzlies team is holding down a playoff spot when most people had them in the bottom two or bottom three in the West. And they play attractive basketball, and they're a team to watch for the future. And Ja is trying to put everyone on a highlight. So that's exciting. And I don't even know why we're putting Zion in this discussion. I don't think he deserves to be in it fairly. But Ja, no one else belongs on the list for me.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, Zion is clearly the better player going forward, but in terms of the season that these two guys have had, Ja Morant's clearly number one. And as you said, nobody expected this Grizzlies team to do anything this year. And he's playing the one position that everyone knows is the most difficult to grasp, especially with the coverages and having to lead a team and learn the schemes and be able to implement them. Because most rookie point guards, even like the first 2 or 3 years, they're absolutely terrible. And this guy's, you know, his splits are incredible. I mean, they're 49% from the field, 37% from three. He was seen as a guy that couldn't really shoot based on just his shot preparation and where he gets the ball off from. He shoots a little bit low, but he's made it work because he's so dynamic and he's just got a lot of moves in his bag, which a lot of people didn't really, you know, see coming. But he's a pick and roll master already. He sort of moves out there like, you know, a combination of Chris Paul and Derrick Rose, in my opinion. And yeah, the Grizzlies have, you know, one of the better cores in the NBA.
Does Ja Morant have the best highlights this year with his almost posters alone?
Yeah, I mean, since Kyrie Irving has been injured most of the season, Ja Morant is the one guy whose highlights I always watch, so I would say yes.
Yeah, he's been an absolute
Yeah, he's up there. Yeah, Zion also has great highlights. Different reasons, but 19 games and he has a ton of highlights already, but I think Ja this year.
All right, well, you guys win this one because you both had Ja winning Rookie of the Year from the get-go. So I had Zion. I thought he was going to play more than 19 games. Obviously, it's kind of different because we couldn't finish the season, but still, 19 is a little low. Who do you have as 2 and 3 then? Because I have Zion and then probably Brandon Clark out of Memphis too. That kid's been a beast.
For me, I'm going to go a little different route. So I'm going to have Zion as number 2, even though I don't even think he should qualify. Like, you should play a minimum of like 25 games or something. But for me, I love Rui Hachimura. I think he's going to be a star in this league, and I can see him having a pretty big role in, not this year, but in 2022 or 2 or 3 years, he'll be a very, very good player. Obviously, he's playing on a Washington team where he gets to play a lot of minutes compared to some of the other rookies, but puts up good stats. He's a big body. He's understanding the game. And I think he's a good defender for a rookie, and I would put him as my number 3.
Yeah, I also had Zion number 2. My number 3, though, I would definitely not choose Rui. I think he's been maybe in the top 10 in terms of rookies, because he's been really inconsistent, and his defense is just terrible. I think 10? The clear number 3, though, is, like Peter said, is Brandon Clark. I mean, he's been really good the entire season. He has, like, the greatest floater of all time. He shoots 62% from the field. And he's shooting 40% from three on, like, a small amount of attempts, obviously. And he's shooting 79% from the free throw line. Like, he's an efficiency monster. And he's doing that for a winning team, too. And he's often in the closing lineup for the Grizzlies, too. So he has a really bright future, despite being a little bit older than most rookies. I think he's 22 or 23 years old. But he came in prepared to play, and he's one of our, you know, fellow Canadians, so good on him.
Summer League MVP, Brandon Clark.
He's fun to watch too. Like, he's bouncy, but he can shoot the ball a little bit too. He's got a really well-rounded game, which most people didn't really see coming into the draft. A lot of people saw him as like your prototypical 4-5 now that can, you know, defend a lot of positions, which he showed. But offensively, he's, you know, 12 points, 6 rebounds. He's only playing 21 minutes a game too. That's only going to go up as you know, the seasons come along.
Yeah, he's one of the best efficiency players in the clutch as well, which is surprising, even getting that playing time over guys like Jonas or Jaren Jackson Jr. You know what I mean? He's killing it, man. Raj, I'm not sure about Rui, man. Why do you like him so much? He's played 41 games. What else has he got? Under 50% from the field, which is still good. 13.4 points. But on a team that's, one, not really winning and isn't really known for defense. So I'm not, like, why do you like this kid so much?
Yeah, again, I know that he was injured, I think around Christmas time with a groin injury. But I think overall, like, the situation in Washington doesn't give him that same exposure, especially being behind Bradley Beal, and their team is really like, please don't watch basketball. But it's fun and exciting on offense. But I think overall, like, he's shown me a lot in a player who hasn't had that same level of expectation as like a player like Zion and Ja, but he's shown me that he can be a clear starter on a team, and I see him as an all-star in probably 3 years. And I think he has a good unique frame. Like, he's a bigger player, but he still has quick feet, probably can guard 2 to 4 pretty comfortably, even maybe get on the perimeter on a 1 occasionally. And again,
he's got a long way to go in that category though.
Yeah, he definitely has the tools necessary, but still, like, averaging 13 points a game, 6 rebounds, he's shooting the ball well, like you mentioned, good free throw percentage, 30 minutes a game, which is pretty good for a rookie. And again, Washington's not winning, but it's no fault of his own. And again, with Brandon Clark, I think he's a great player. I definitely see the reason why he gets a lot of attention and why he should be considered as one of the top rookies this year is just, for me, because he's playing behind Jaren Jackson Jr. and Jonas, like, he's playing against a lot of second units as off the bench. And I think that's the only thing that's really holding me back, because I just haven't seen him on the court as much as I've seen Rui, although Rui has been injured.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's holding Rui back is his three-point percentage, because he only shot 27% from the three-point line this season. So if he's going to be your prototypical now stretch four, he's got to be able to stretch the court out a little bit. And that's the part of his game he's going to have to improve. But, you know, again, he's young, so I like him too in the future. But I think this year, I think there's no question that Clark has had a better season overall, just in terms of his impact on winning. And, you know, he's not a negative on defense, which, again, going back to Morant, is very rare for a rookie.
Yeah, and then special shout outs to Kendrick Nunn, Eric Pascal. Both guys who came out of nowhere, essentially, and Nunn is the head point guard on a playoff team, which is pretty impressive considering he beat out Goran Dragic for the starting job.
Yeah, and also Tyler Herro's had a pretty good year before he got injured, and my guy Terrence Davis, playing big minutes for the Raptors during an injury-plagued season, came out of nowhere. The Raptors signed him after seeing one game when he played, I think, for Denver in the Summer League. Signed him, and he's been really good on defense, surprisingly, and he's just a competitor. Like, he just gets out there and gets after it. Like, he doesn't give a crap, you know? He just, some of the threes that he takes are, they look ridiculous, but they go in, and you know, he's fearless out there. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, Terrence Davis has been great for the Raptors. Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. All right, moving on. Raj, who do you have for Sixth Man of the Year?
All right, so here might be an unconventional pick, but I'm going to go with Dennis Schroeder. A team that's surprised every single analyst, anyone that follows basketball, even OKC fans were probably surprised on how good their team's been. And a huge part has to do with Dennis Schroeder's performance. I think the other people who were in contention, it was kind of, they were taking each other's minutes and taking each other's points away. But again, Dennis Schroeder is averaging like 19 points per game. And again, one of the better closing lineups. I think OKC, I think Chris Paul is one of the more clutch players, if I'm not wrong. So
the most clutch,
surprisingly.
No, but get out of here.
It's just surprising, but again, I think Dennis Schroeder,
this
fallacy
in the media that Chris Paul is not a clutch player is a bunch of garbage. Like, he had one bad playoff game where he, you know, tried to draw a foul against Russell Westbrook and threw it up from like 70 feet trying to get a 3-point play. You know, that's just one game. He's been clutch his entire career.
Okay, we're not here to talk about your boy Chris Paul, Josh.
I'm just relax.
You don't need to defend the guy right now, not here.
But yeah, going back to Schroeder again, 19 points per game, like almost 4 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting a great percentage from the field at like 46, surprisingly shooting the 3 at like 38%. And he's playing a lot of minutes for a OKC team that's surprising a lot of like fans of the game. And I think compared to the other two, probably front runners for this award, I think he's been very good, and I think he deserves the sixth man. This is a close one.
I also had Schroeder as my number one. So yep. Going along with what you were saying, like, his efficiency, especially this season, has like the system that OKC runs has been basically perfect for him. And the fact that they were able to find a way to fit in both, you know, obviously him, Chris Paul, and then SGA as well in their closing lineup. And whoever really has the mismatch out of those three just runs the pick and roll into oblivion until, you know, the team can't really do much against that. But yeah, like, overall, he's shooting 38% from three, which is a huge step up from his career totals. Like, his best year before that was 35% in his second season, where he shot 2 a game. Now he's shooting 5 a game. And his free throw percentage has gone up versus last year, too. Assists are about the same as last year. But overall, he just fit in really well, and nobody really expected that coming from Atlanta. A lot of people saw him as a bad contract, but, you know, Billy Donovan has made it work.
Does he benefit from OKC not being able to find a real option at the three? Because in the clutch, you're looking at a lineup of Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, and then SGA. SGA is, well, was regarded as a point guard last year, right? And now they have him running the three in clutch lineups. So Schroeder's got to be able to take advantage of that situation, right? Like, if they had anyone who was capable of playing valuable minutes at the small forward position, wouldn't you just have Chris Paul and Shea out there?
I don't know. I mean, that lineup has been the best crunch time lineup in the NBA, hasn't it? So what they're doing is working, so why not keep running it?
Did you ever think you would see a 3-point guard lineup? Like, that's crazy. 2-point guards.
I mean, based on their roster, I think, yeah. I mean, who else are you going to play, right? Like, they have Terrence Ferguson, who was the expected starter. And then, you know, obviously he lost his spot to Lugans Dort, who's been really good on defense, another Canadian, I believe. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, there's really nobody else in that roster you want to put in that spot unless you want to go super big with Gallo at the three. But even then, who would you really put at the four? Like, their roster isn't great, but, you know, their core five guys are really good together.
Yeah. No, I have Schroeder winning it as well. So I'm not contending that he shouldn't be, but it's just interesting how you just need the perfect situation to work out for you sometimes. Because, like I said, if they had anyone capable of playing that position, I don't think he would be playing the crunch time minutes right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Chris Paul being on that team, I know, going back to Chris Paul again, but I think he has also put a lot of confidence in Schroeder to be the guy in a lot of situations, especially in crunch time. To where, you know, Schroeder is sometimes guarded by the worst defensive player, 1 through 3 from the other team, since, you know, they're trying to focus on SGA and Chris Paul. And Chris Paul is giving up the ball to him and saying, you know, go do this. So, you know, you saw his percentages go up 6% this year versus last year with him having Westbrook on the team. So once again, proving Chris Paul is a much better player than Russell Westbrook.
Thanks.
Just had to get that in there.
Thank you very much for the clarification.
Yes, no problem.
All right, Raj, who did you have for 2 and 3?
Yeah, so in this order, I had Harrell and Lou Williams. And I know you were talking about Schroeder being in the perfect situation. I think this is kind of the opposite side of the spectrum, where you have two players that are, they're in good situations. Like the Clippers are doing well. Harrell and Lou Williams are a very powerful 1-2 off the bench. But they also do take valuable minutes away from each other, scoring, output. So this is a situation where if you were just trying to win an award, I think this is a bad situation for Harrell and Williams. But I think Harrell this year, especially with the Clippers really only having one center on their roster, they need Harrell's production off the bench. And Harrell usually plays the crunch time minutes later in the third and the fourth. And Zubac usually plays like the first half, gets his like 8 and 8, and then takes the rest basically for the rest of the night. So Harrell's been putting up good numbers. And then obviously Lou Williams, now in history, one of the best six men to ever do it.
Yeah, for me, I don't really think Lou Williams has been as good this year versus last year, so I put him down one spot. I actually have Goran Dragic as my number 3.
Yes.
And I have Harrell as number 2. I mean, Williams, you know, going back to our talk about other players not playing well during certain points of the season, there's been a certain point, especially like when George and Kawhi are both in the lineup, that Williams sort of becomes redundant in a lot of lineups, where he's not really getting the ball as much and he's not really running a lot of pick and roll. So he's just sort of out there. And then the Clippers have gone to more defensive unit at times with, you know, either Marcus Morris or before him having, what's his name? The guy from Portland? Harkless. Yeah, having Harkless in the lineup instead of Williams just to have more defense out there. So I just don't think Lou Williams has been as good as last year. So for that reason, I have Dragic as my number 3, and he's been really good off the Heat bench in a whole new role. Just the fact that he was able to transition to being a sixth man after being a starting player for, you know, most of his career before, you know, he was on his Phoenix Suns, obviously, when he's behind Nash. But after that, he's been a starter for most of his career, and just him going into that role, not complaining a bit, and just accepting that and playing a little bit less minutes overall, but being the guy off the bench for the Heat, I think he's been really good.
Yeah, I really didn't think that he would take kindly to playing off the bench, but he has been surprisingly quiet about it. But he is still playing a lot of crunch time minutes, right? Like, he's one of those guys that comes in, plays like, what, 25 minutes a game? But a lot of those minutes are when the game actually matters, with like down the stretch with Butler and, you know, the rest of the crew. So it's a lot better than, you know, starting and then not finishing, in my mind. Maybe that's what's getting him through.
Yeah, and as he's getting older, too, it's better to play him in a more limited role in terms of minutes especially, and just play him more so when it matters over, you know, a guy like Nunn or Hero, who have less experience. So I think, you know, if the playoffs do actually happen, you're going to see him in the closing lineups versus at least one of those guys.
Yeah. I had the same thing. I had Harrell and Dragic at the third spot for this, so it's pretty much the same. I mean, Lou Will has been really good. I think he's going to go down in history as the best sixth man ever. The award can basically be called the Lou Williams Award now, swaying away from the Jamal Crawford Award, which is hilarious because they're basically the same player. But,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. I mean, Kawhi and PG coming into this team is probably the best thing that ever happened for the Clippers, but for Lou Will, it might be one of the worst things that's ever happened.
He is averaging a career high in assists, though, I think, this year. So that's one thing that sort of surprised me looking at his numbers.
That's true. He's getting 5.7 assists. You're right, Raj. He might get his ring if if the playoffs ever come back. He might actually get the ring.
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, moving on. We're going to go to most improved player. And I think we should all have basically the same guys at the top of those lists, right? My assumption is that we're picking between Bam Adebayo out of Miami, Brandon Ingram out of New Orleans, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, our Canadian, in OKC. And then if you want to stretch it, Pascal Siakam in Toronto. For me personally, I love the way Bam has played all year. He's essentially running the offense as a 5, which is incredible. He's running a lot of the fast breaks. He's the defensive anchor on this Miami team. averaging 16.2 points, 10.5 rebounds, 5.1 assists. He's been absolutely killer. That's not taking anything away from Brandon Ingram or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but Bam is my guy. I love the way this guy plays. He's a dog out there. He's getting all the minutes that he needs now that Hassan Whiteside is gone, and he's taking full advantage of the situation.
Yeah, I don't really like choosing guys in their second year, so I didn't have SGI on my list. And with Pascal, I think a lot like Bam, I mean, they're both just getting a lot more opportunity. But I think with Bam's skill set, I think that's the biggest thing that separates him from a guy like Siakam. I think Siakam's Bam year was last year, to where his skills went from, you know, a guy that was an energy guy to a guy that could handle the ball and run pick and roll and such. The one thing that Pascal has improved a lot this year is his pull-up jump shooting. Being able to pull up from three, which he couldn't do last year. But Bam, just overall, his passing, the way he runs pick and roll now with whoever's, you know, the lead ball handler, and his defense has just been taken to another level. And, you know, obviously on the boards, he's averaging 11 rebounds a game. So more opportunity has really, you know, pushed him in a position that he's one of the best centers in the NBA now, which some people saw coming, I think, from last year when a lot of people were questioning why he wasn't getting more minutes than Whiteside. But this year, he's had all the opportunity in the world, and he's also my number one.
Josh, like, again, I agree with you, but I want to know who's right behind Bam. Like, how do you go 2, 3, maybe even 4?
Number two is difficult for me, honestly. I don't really... I'm not sure. I think I would probably choose a guy that you guys haven't even mentioned yet, and it's a bonus. I think Sabonis has taken a massive leap up this year too, and he's probably the main reason why Indiana's even in, you know, the position that they're in with losing Oladipo for pretty much the entire season up until the last month or so. And a lot of people are questioning whether Indiana was going to keep one or the other between him and Miles Turner and who was a better player, but I think this year has clearly answered that with Sabonis becoming the main guy and averaging 19 points and 12 rebounds on crazy efficiency from the field and just taking whichever matchup comes to him and just doing his thing every single night.
So you have Sabonis at 2. Who do you have at 3 and 4? Or should I give you a minute?
3, I would probably go with Jason Tatum just because of his progression over the course of the last 2 or 3 months. He's gone from being, you know, a quasi-all-star to maybe even a superstar now. So, I mean, his off-the-dribble game especially has taken another leap, which I'm not sure how that happened halfway through the season, but his handle's a lot tighter now. He's getting to the basket at ease, and he has a couple step-back moves that are basically unstoppable now. So he looks a lot like Kawhi out there, to be honest, on offense, which is sort of weird to say, but it's interesting. He's really taken a couple steps up this season.
Wow, I did not expect Sabonis or Tatum. Tatum has been really good, though.
Yeah, I'm more surprised that Brandon Ingram's left off of your top three. Like, I thought he was a lock to get at least the third position and most improved. For me, I have Bam number one. I think that's consensus, especially because Hassan Whiteside left this year and he was given a bigger role and he's filled those shoes and then exceeded them as well. And then he's done that improving his game. Brandon Ingram, for me, is a player that had ample opportunity in a Lakers uniform, got shipped off to New Orleans. And I think there's a lot of questions about how good and how productive a player he will be. And a lot of players or a lot of the media fans were considering that Kuzma is a better player than Brandon Ingram, and that the Lakers want to keep Kuzma and not Brandon Ingram. And I think Ingram has exceeded, I think, even New Orleans' expectations. He's really improved his game, became an all-star this year. He's not reaching his full potential yet, but he's taking steps towards that. And then again, rounding out my top three is Jason Tatum. I think Tatum hasn't had the big leap, but there are some games, especially the games against the Clippers, and he had a game against the Rockets, and he's had like maybe 8 to 10 games where he's just really like looked like the most improved player. The rest of the season, he still looks very good, but not on the same level as Bam or Brandon Ingram, but Tatum's a superstar in the making.
Yo, Ingram is shooting 86% from the line. Last year, he shot 67.5%. His three-point percentage went from 33 to 38.7. How crazy is that? What did this guy do during the summer?
I think it was the same shooting coach that fixed Lonzo Ball shot that has done the same thing with Ingram, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember what his name is, but I saw like a documentary on him, and he's been doing a great job, obviously. He's fixed Lonzo's shot to where he's not shooting from the left side of his head anymore, yeah. And he's taking it when he catches it, no matter if he's open or not. He's has a lot of confidence in the shot now, so I think Ingram's the same way now, where he's getting an open shot in a catch-and-shoot situation. He's not over dribbling now and getting himself into bad scenarios where he's taking long twos anymore.
Just goes straight up, eh? Yeah. Is it JJ Redick? Is that who you're talking about?
No.
You like that one, eh?
No, I'm sure he's helped. Also,
yeah.
Sly there, Peter, sly. But Josh, can you just explain how you left Brandon Ingram off your list? Like, I guess Sabonis has had, not a guess, I know that Sabonis has improved this year, but I don't think he's made anywhere close to the leap that Ingram has.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me. I just think that Sabonis has more of an impact on winning overall, because if you look at those two rosters, would you really say that Indiana has a better roster without Oladipo versus New Orleans? And New Orleans was really struggling despite Brandon Ingram breaking out. So even though he was putting up like a lot of stats, I just don't think that he was really impacting winning as much as Sabonis was.
I mean, it's true. All right, Indiana is definitely winning more, but I don't think that's indicative of their improvement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like also East versus West.
Yeah, that too.
True.
But the idea of the award is to show who's improved the most. I mean, Sabonis has always been pretty good. Brandon Ingram has been good too, but he's elevated to a way different level.
I mean, unpopular opinion though, but Ingram was also putting up a lot of stats in games where New Orleans is going through that long losing streak as well. Ooh. So he's playing a lot of minutes to where like they were down 10 to 12 points plus the entire game. So, I mean, some of those stats are a little bit inflated, but overall his shooting has obviously gone up a few notches, and his defense has always been pretty good too. So I'll give him credit, but I just think Sabonis has improved a little bit more.
He's a young Kevin Durant.
Even while praising, Josh still has to give him his subtle digs, like a few notches.
I'm just worried about New Orleans and Zion, to be honest, because if they give both Ball and Ingram massive contracts once their extensions are up, I just don't really know how far this team can get with, you know, Brandon Ingram being a number two. I still don't trust him in that role. I just don't think he's good enough.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. He's got a lot to prove, but he's only 4 years in, right? So this could be the first big step in a lot of big steps.
Yeah, that's true. And also, the assistant coach that I was referring to, his name is Fred Vinson from New Orleans.
You mispronounced JJ Redick.
He's the guy that's responsible, apparently.
You mispronounced JJ Redick.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, Josh, I definitely saved this one for you. Who is your coach of the year?
Honestly, I had a hard time with this one. I mean, ultimately, I chose Nick Nurse, but I think the second guy, I think, has to be Billy Donovan. Because of what he's done with the Oklahoma City roster, another situation where, you know, most of the media and most people, most fans didn't think Oklahoma was going to be able to do anything this year. They'd be trading off half their roster come the trade deadline. But they were good enough to where they said, you know what, let's just run this and we'll see what happens in the offseason because we have so much flexibility in draft picks moving forward. Why not try to win a little bit and maybe win a round this year? And, you know, not having Westbrook in the fold has really helped Donovan, I think, overall in terms of implementing his system instead of Westbrook just running things. So, and making the three-point guard lineup work, having basically no bench and making this team work in terms of getting a fifth seed right now, I mean, that's pretty incredible. But ultimately, Nick Nurse and the Raptors being able to implement a system where anybody can come in and provide good minutes, because most of the team has been injured this season. And there's been a situation where like four starters have been out for a long course of the regular season. And yet you implement guys that are coming off the bench like Terrence Davis, Matt Thomas, Boucher, guys who a lot of people never even heard of coming into and playing 20 plus minutes a game and playing winning basketball. It's pretty incredible. Like I've said in the previous podcast, the Raptors are the new age San Antonio Spurs, where they can just pick up anybody, put them in the system, and they're going to play well.
I agree with everything you said, except the last San Antonio Spurs, because they've done it for what, a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And the Spurs have done it for how long? 20 years.
This is only the beginning. We have the best executive in the league and the best coach in the league. That's a good start.
It's a good start. And then again, for the award, Nick Nurse. I think it is very close between Nick Nurse and Billy Donovan. I think two factors go in Nick Nurse's favor. First, they lost the reigning finals MVP, one of the best players in the game right now, in Leonard and Danny Green. And they are expected to win more games than they did last year, which is incredible on its own. And then on top of that, this year, it's not like the rest of the roster has been healthy. And most teams aren't healthy over the course of a year. But most teams aren't as injured as the Raptors were. Losing, like you mentioned, four out of their five starters. Even some of their bench guys have been injured. And they've been injured not for one or two games. We're talking about like 10-plus games, 15-plus games that a lot of these Raptors have missed over the course of the season. And they had like a 14-game winning streak. Team defense, we talked about this earlier, second best rating. Like, this team is deep, they're playing well coached.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's a perfect summary. Who do you guys have for like the three or four? I guess I had Bud at the two, not Billy Donovan, but I don't want to take anything away from Billy Donovan. You may have convinced me to put him in second place here. I had Coach Bud at three and then Frank Vogel at four, just having to manage, you know, all the personalities in LA. He's pretty much pushed off Jason Kidd from, remember in, when did they get Vogel? Probably in like August, September, when we thought that Jason Kidd would just slide in there to be the head coach without anyone noticing. But Vogel's pretty much held on and made this team one of the best defensive teams in the league. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, it was tough with number three with me. I picked Budenholzer ultimately, just because Milwaukee's just been that much better, I think, than everyone else. But Vogel's done a great job, and he's really under the radar. I mean, people are still talking about Jason Kidd being like the head coach on that team, really. That's just not the case. And Vogel was good with Indiana, too. Like, and he got put in a bad position, I think, with Orlando afterwards, right?
So, yeah. Orlando.
He's always been a good coach.
That guy was really shooting his shot going to Orlando. Major heat check.
Hey, take that money.
Heat check moment, man.
Or just getting that check, one of the two.
Just to round out my top three, I had obviously Nick Nurse number one, Billy Donovan number two, and this is a name that we haven't mentioned, which I think for me is like one of the best coaches probably in basketball. It just doesn't get the same credit, in Rick Carlisle. That Mavericks team on paper doesn't look like a team that would have started off as hot as they did, and they play good basketball, and I think they're, what, the seventh seed right now in the NBA?
In the West.
And yeah, sorry, in the West. And like, he's made that work. Obviously, having a player like Luka doesn't hurt you, but the pieces that they have around Luka, he just made a perfect system. Like, he's slowly integrating KP into the offense, and he's getting more and more of a role. And he's doing a good job with a team that on paper isn't probably the seventh best team in the West.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good that Rick. Same idea as Coach Spoelstra in Miami, right? Being around for a long time, great at managing characters on the team. I don't think any of us thought Miami would be in the fourth seed in the East this year, but here we are, and he's made guys like Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson really excel at their positions right now.
Yeah, I think just having Duncan Robinson being what he is and just telling him, like, whenever you catch the ball, you better shoot it or else you're going to be on the bench. Just for that fact, he should be in the running as well.
Any coach encouraging guys to just gun, that's what we want to see.
Is Duncan Robinson the third best shooter in the NBA right now?
Behind Stephen Clay?
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely
he might be there.
Who else can you think that's like on that level of a shooter right now? Redick?
Yeah, I think he's doing what Redick has done the last couple of seasons now, but better, because Redick is getting older now, so he's not as effective.
Beal?
No, I would take Robinson.
You think Robinson?
In terms of like pure three-point shooting and just being able to, like, you know, catch the ball around screens and be able to put up ridiculous shots from like 27 feet.
Maybe.
Bertans.
Yeah, Bertans. That's true.
I think Karl Towns is in the running too.
Nah.
Honestly, like, he was shooting like 41% on like 10 plus attempts for the longest time until he got injured.
It's easy when you're playing like 30 games a year, okay?
That's only this year, though. Let's relax here. He used to be an Iron Man. He was like Jokic. He played every game.
Yeah, until he didn't.
And yeah, I think they were just trying to tank, though. I don't think he's really that injured.
And look at his team now, 19-45. My man is out here playing Fortnite instead of playing NBA games.
I'm looking forward, though, to once he goes to a good team and showing just how great he is. I'm still on the Karl Towns bandwagon.
I'm not looking forward to his pouting. Karl-Anthony Towns has one of like the worst pouting faces in the league.
That is true. That is true.
Right?
Name me. So does LeBron.
Yeah, it's like those two and like Harden is up there. But guys who just like look awful when they're pouting.
Dwayne Wade is funny, though. He's just like total bewilderment.
Yeah.
How do you not call this?
He had the Duncan face. Are you kidding me?
The surprise
You're
face.
Not giving me this call? That face.
Yeah.
Do you know who I am?
Actually, Lowry's pretty bad for that, too.
Yeah, but Lowry plays into the crowd. Lowry's basically like a WWF fighter.
Yeah. But he like runs off and he like runs away from the ref to show him up. I don't like those types either, but you know, Lowry's my guy, so I can't complain too much.
It's a blatant disrespect by Kyle Lowry.
Yeah. The complain and walk away, the hit and run.
I like that. All right. I think that's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Anchor, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.